Yeah. That's my point. That's okay. Question is, well, wait a minute. Question is that how did Yaakov fool Esau? Fool Esau with the present that he sent him. I mean, Esau wasn't a dummy. I mean, he wasn't a fool. He's a brilliant person. No reason to assume that his mind was any less than Yaakov's even. I mean, if Nasi Yitzchak is a very intelligent man. No, I mean to say, he gave him a present and then that's it, and it worked. Anyway, you just buy him off. He was no dummy. What's the chat? Your mother said you're well, you know the answer. Esh l'chol l'hagid l'adoni l'mto chen b'einecha. It's interesting, the Chazal said whenever they had to deal with Goyim, they always learn over the parsha, this parsha. To learn the idea of how to in the fight to go. So it says, l'mto chen b'einecha sh'ani sholem imcha u'mevakesh ahavoscha. That's how we got it. Sh'ani sholem imcha u'mevakesh ahavoscha. I'm looking for your love. In other words, the only way he was able to reach Esau was to show him, to demonstrate to him that he had a sincere desire to have a personal relationship with him. He was after the individual. It was Esau personally. He was able to convince Esau that he's interested in a very close, intimate relationship with Esau, his person, the Gavra. He didn't just buy him off. He gave his present. I mean, Esau was no fool, so it wouldn't mean. But he was able to convey to him the idea that he really is interested in Esau's personality, the Gavra, the individual, wants to have a Mavakesh Avasva. That's what Rashi says. Evo Eshlocho Lahagid Ladoni Limto Chain Beinecha. That's how he got him. The only way you can get to a person is to make him feel that the person is important. The gavra is important. It's you I want. The mincha is nothing. Everything is only a means. But what really reaches an individual and tell him it's you I'm after. I want to have a relationship with you. He was able to convince Esau that that's what he's after. It was an amazing feat. Yeah. It was an amazing feat to be able to do such a thing like that. But he knew, Yaakov with his chachma knew, that that's the only way he's going to win over Esau. That he made Esau believe that now, everything he did in his life, as a matter of fact, up till this point, was only for one purpose. What's the purpose? To be able to spend time with Esau. Able to spend time with Esau. And that's why he said that was the that in Mavon Garti vo echaradata. What does it mean vo echaradata? Vo echaradata means that I was delayed. What was I delayed from? What's the delay from what? From meeting with you, from being with you. That's what delayed means. Everything I did was only a means for this moment that I could spend time with you. Vo echa, I'm sorry I'm late. I couldn't help it. I had to work for Mavon for 20 years. And that's why it took me so long. But now I'm here. What's my objective? To spend time with you, Esau. That was the way he convinced me. Well, Eicharadata. What's the proof? Was he successful?
Yes.
What's the proof? The proof is no. The proof is right away that after what did Esau say? Then it was right in the parsha. Yeah. Exactly. He says that Vayoma Nisav and Elecha Veelchol and Negdecha. Let's go travel together. He said, let's travel together. Vayoma Elav Adoni Deke Elodim Rakam. I'm sorry, I'd like to do it, but I can't do it. V'meis Kolatzon Yavar No Adoni Lifnei Adol. You go first. Ani Esnala Leitya Go Slowly L'Regel Amlocha Shalafonei L'Regel HaYelodim. Ah, that's your avoa la doni se. until I come to you to say it. Shemiyavo Adoni Seira. Okay. Then Asa said, let me put some people with you. No, let me do it myself. But Asa was convinced a lot. Yaakov's whole desire, his whole all his striving revolved around the moment that he had the opportunity to be together with Asa. That's how he pulled it. That's how he pulled it. Of course, he took a long time, long journey. Never really got to say it. But Asa was there. Asa was there. He sees he never shows up. So apparently, first of all, it's a different kind of an anger, right? And there's a lot of excuses. He couldn't this, that, different problems occurred. Different things, excuses. But he removed the sinner, the burning sinner. He removed the burning. He was successful in removing the burning sinner. The next thing, Esav is waiting for him to show up. Well, you know, a few days later, Esav's not busy with his own with his own business. And Yaakov's trying to get there, so he didn't. But he was able to convince him at the moment that that's what he really wants. That's the lima from the pasuk. The only way Yaakov knew this, the only way to reach a person is not through minchas and through presents. It's all nothing. Doesn't mean anything. There's no value whatsoever, no matter what you give him in terms of money or whatever. Meaningless. It's only a framework for one thing, and that is that the person has to feel that it's him that you really want. Everything is just trimmings, man, just to demonstrate that one idea. What's going to happen later, you worry about later. Right now, you have to set the scene that you have to remove the immediate emergency. This emergency is going to lead to other problems. This is going to be waiting. Yeah, we'll give them other answers later. But at the time, you have to overcome the emergency. That's the different, let him have different kind of thing. Basically, what Yaakov did was he converted Esau's kindness. Converted Esau's kindness. His original kindness of hatred and the sinas mavas that he wanted to destroy him because of the Bechora, that he got rid of, and he let him have a new set of kindness. Why he's not coming, where is he? Different kind of kindness. These kind of kindness you can live with. The other kind of you can be destroyed. So Yaakov is the master at converting the kindness. The ones that are less dangerous. Rashi's just not a mafarish. If Rashi doesn't mention a medrash, it means that the medrash is not the not pshuta shel mikra. Medrash that's not pshuta shel mikra, you have to deal with it in a different way. Different kinds of medrash. In other words, he was willing to forfeit the brach. There was a certain extent of forfeiture involved in that action. In other words, what he was saying was, look, you keep all the mazah together, just don't destroy me and let me have my Yelima Torah. And the bowing down, the fact that he bowed down, so it means in the bowing down there was a certain forfeiture. He said, all right, let him have the, just leave me alone. And the forfeiture was wrong. Because he should not have forfeited all the mazah. You shouldn't have thought it was wrong. That's why it says it does a lufin. That's why it's negative that you have the alufin. Which means to say it was a direct result of his forfeiture. He went too far. Because of his forfeiture, so that's why he didn't, that's why they took over. It means to say that even though a person is in a moment of sakana, and at that moment certainly it is worthwhile to forfeit the physical, because it would be ridiculous to maintain the physical and lose his life. But the forfeiture, how the person looks at this forfeiture is going to make a difference in the future. If he looks at it like just a political action, but basically he's not willing to give up a thing, you see, mentally, he's just waiting until he could get it back, that's one thing. But if at the moment he really is yielding, there's a big danger. Because of that, he's not going to really strive to maintain the physical, and others will take it over. That's what I think the Medrash means. That the Alufim resulted from the fact that he was so happy to save his life that he forfeited the physical. And the forfeiture of the physical was really wrong. But at that moment, he was willing to forfeit. He says, look, let him leave me alone already, and that's it. I'll save my life. I can sit and bob myself in court and talk to him, and that's it. So he was just trying to save his is the nitzchias. But he forfeited, because of the saving of the nitzchias, he forfeited the physical. He shouldn't have done it. And because he was mentally attuned to in that direction, he lost out and the other aloofim took over. That's what it means. That's what I would say the matter means. It was more than just an act, in other words. It was more than just the act. He actually, he meant it to a certain degree. To a certain degree. Okay? If you give back land, so then you can't believe in it. You really can't believe in that piece. This could be a practical matter. A practical matter. But the moment you start believing in it, then you're going to lose out. That's what it means over there. A certain amount he was already willing to give up. And that he shouldn't have done. So starting prayer commission. Yeah. Basara mamoros nivrola. So the world was created with 10 mamoros. All right. What does it mean, 10 mamoros? It means that there are 10 statements in Bereshis where it says Vayoma. Where it says Vayoma. 10 statements in the Torah. In the creation of the world, so the Torah has Vayoma 10 times. Actually, it's only 9 times. But the first one is Bereshis. Vidvar Hashem Shemayim Nasu, Ruach Piv Kol Tzvah. So it means to say that there were 10 different acts on the part of God in the creation of the universe. 10 separate acts. Okay. So, Pashtus, I mean, the days mean the Mamoros was the initiating action. The initiating actions. That's the Mamoros. But the days was were that which resulted. The units. There were different stages. Now, the initiating actions on the part of God don't correspond necessarily to the stages that emerge. Don't necessarily correspond to the stages that emerge. Okay, so Yom Echad, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, Yom Revi, those represent the various stages that took place that existed in creation. But the stage is not synonymous with God's initiation. God's initiation is a different thing. It's a different thing. You can have two acts of initiation, and yet one stage emerges. Okay. All right. So it means that there was ten initiating actions in the creation on the part of God. All right. So the question is, so what's it? Who cares? I mean, why should we care about this? So it says, Uma Talmud Lomar. That's the question. Uma Talmud Lomar. Valo b'mamor echod yocholi boros. It could have been created with one maimar. All right. Elali parmen arashoyim shem ma'abdin esa olam shenivra basar mamoros. V'litein socha tov l'tadikim shem ma'kayimen esa olam shenivra basar mamoros. So the reason was, it could have been with one. So why was it with 10? Because to give an onish to the shoyim that destroy the world that was created with 10 mamaros, and to give schar to the tzaddikim that amakayim sustain the world that was created with 10 mamaros. All right. What does it mean when it says v'alo b'mayim or echad yachalib? V'alo b'mayim or echad yachalib? Because and science can have no knowledge of such a thing because this is before science. Science can only make deductions based upon what exists now. But they can't speak about a time before creation because there's no way to study such phenomena. Okay, so it's outside the realm of science, but outside the realm of knowledge. But what is it? Let's understand what it means, though. Basically, it says that it's in 10 mamaros it was created, and it could have been created in one maimar. What do you mean it could have been created in one maimah? And the reason why God made it 10 is because the Rishonim should get punished and the Tzaddikim should gain schar. Alright, so it could have made 100 maimah. It could have made 100 maimah, 1,000 maimah. His name was Levi Sof. Now what it means like this, it doesn't mean to say, you cannot say that it means that God could have created it with one maimah. To make such a statement is nonsensical. Because God does everything with His infinite wisdom, His infinite chachma. And if His chachma decreed that it should be 10 mamaros, So then it couldn't have been one minor, because that's what his knowledge decrees. So what does the Mishnah mean? So it could have been Valo b'maimar echad yochali boros. What does it mean? What does the Mishnah mean? Yeah. So what's the pshat? One says Valo b'maimar echad yochali boros. What does it mean with one maimar could have been created? No, what it means is simply. What it means is Uma Talmud Loma. Doesn't mean to say that with one maimar could have been created. It means, why did the pasuk have to tell you this? Why did the pasuk have to tell you this? Valo b'maimar echad yochali boros means the pasuk could have described it in one maimar. In one maimar, and it would convey the idea. The dvar Hashem shemayim nasu of ruch pivkol tzvam. So the pasuk could have just said there was a dvar Hashem, and that's it. Why did the pasuk have to tell us that basar? What do we gain from the knowledge that basar b'maras nivra olam? Torah is not trying to tell us something about physics here. It's beyond the realm of science anyways. Now the processes involved in creating, as the Rambam points it out in the Mor Nevuchim, the processes involved in creating an object are totally different from an analytical standpoint than the way the object is and you analyze it after it exists. It's a completely different thing. You can't go from one to the other. So therefore it's not an area of scientific knowledge. Up to creation is not scientific. From creation on is scientific. But in creation itself, you see, can't be, because it's yesh me'ayin, and yesh me'ayin is impossible to comprehend based upon the yesh. You can only study the yesh. So the Torah, what's the purpose of the Torah? That's what I mean. What's the purpose of the Torah in telling you about that it was Asar Mamaros? What difference does it make? Why did the Torah have to specify and mention the way that God created the universe, why does it have to tell you that God acted in 10 mamaros? It should have just said, Dvar Hashem, Shemayim, Nasu, Ruch Tov Kol Tzvam. It was a Dvar Hashem, and that was it. That's the Mishnah's Kasha. Ma Talmud Loma, what's the purpose? What's the purpose of such a thing? Who cares? It's not knowledge for us. So what is the answer? So the answer is Liparman and Rashorim Shema Abdin Es Olam Shemiru Basam Amaras Vitin Sofa Tel Tzadikim Shema Kaim Es Olam Shemiru Basam Amaras. What does it mean? Ram says Basam Amaras Kishis Estanko B'chol Masha B'maisa B'reishis. So why did it do it? He says the purpose was to show you Godel Zehamatzias V'tov Sidro V'shem Afsido Mafsid Dova Godel. That a person who's mafsid who destroys it is destroying a great thing. Umesakno yisakin davagadol. Rotzaloma shem afsidom mishi yafsid nafsho. A person that destroys a soul, which means that he doesn't live in accordance with the ways of life that sustain the soul. Asher biyadol asakno ulafsido. Ukiilu atachlus haachron. Ukiilu atachlus haachron mikol avtzias. Asher omar bo asom amoros. K'moshe biyano psichas liberanos. So what does it mean? So it means to say, to teach a person that the Bria was created with 10 Mamaros. So what does it mean? Is it a numerical value? The fact that it's 10 Mamaros and not 1. I mean, what would it be? 15 would be different. It would be 20, it would be even more. I mean, what is it? What does it mean? What does the Mishnah mean? See, it's not a question of numbers. The point is, Basara Mamoros Nivra Olam, Uma Talmud Loma, doesn't mean to say that because it's 10 and not 1, that's why it's more significant. And let's say it would be 1, so then it would be less significant. What kind of sense does that make? You see? What it means is, and it's ridiculous, I mean, to say that if it was 1, it would be less important. This doesn't make any sense. What it means is, why did the Torah go into any detail in the creation? What's the purpose of it? The Torah is really a sefer to teach a person a derech hachayim, teach a person how to perfect himself, how to live properly, and how to attain olam haba. That's the purpose. So why should the Torah, which that's the objective of the sefer, why should the Torah talk about how God created the universe? That's God's area, not our area. What does it have to do with it? Well, why should the Torah do it? There's no reason for it. That's what Chazal would Chazal bother with that problem. This is not how God created the universe, is God's infinite chokhmah. We obviously can never understand such a thing. It's beyond our. We're only creatures of the universe itself. So how do we understand the universe is created? It's impossible. So there's no reason for the Torah to mention this, that God created the universe in this way or in that way. Now, what's the reason? So why did the Torah do it? So the Mishnah says an interesting answer. The Mishnah says that the Torah is trying to show you. The Torah is trying to show you is purposefully mentioning the details of the creation in order to give a person an ethical motivation. What is the nature of the ethical motivation? What it means is like this. You see, and that's why I think this is the last, this is really the last parak, by the way. The fifth parak is the last parak. But why is this the last one? Because it means like this. It's assuming, it's presupposing. This parak is presupposing a certain level of perfection. See, most people, what is their motivation? Even if their motivation is for perfection. But it's a personal motivation. It means I want to achieve perfection because I want it for myself. I want to have a good life. So that's my motivation. This Mishnah is telling you that there's a deeper motivation that a human being is capable of. And it's of a different nature. What is the motivation? The motivation is based on reality. In other words, it's an objective kind of motivation. A person would say, for instance, if a person contributes towards something which he thinks is beneficial, let's say a town wants to build a park, get together and build an area for people to relax and enjoy themselves. So a person contributes. So he has a motivation. His motivation is he wants to go and take a walk in the park. All right? So it's a personal motivation. But if an individual, when he's in a park, even though he may never be there, he may decide to leave the town, you see, and he sees something is destroying the park, he might say, look, I could stop this. I could prevent this. How could I allow such a beautiful thing to be destroyed? Something which has a purpose. That's a higher kind of motivation. It's a motivation which is based upon the recognition of the reality of the existence of a certain thing. It's a different kind of motivation. A person will say it's simply to allow something like this to be destroyed is simply not proper, regardless of whether I can gain something out of it. It's a motivation which a human being is capable of. It's on a much higher level than the personal motivation. The personal. You're right. Ecology is the concept of Baltashkas is how can you destroy something which is even though you don't care, it doesn't benefit you in any way. You see. What Chazal is saying is like this. Basar Mamoris Minivrola means that what should a person's motivation be in perfecting himself? So you say simply, selfish motivation. Chazal say no, it's more than that. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Not that there's anything wrong with the selfish motivation. Because a person should be selfish when it comes to perfection. It's correct. It's true. But there's a higher level. The higher level is where the motivation stems from an objective framework. An objective framework means like this, that if a person would recognize that the universe was created for him, so that would mean that if he does not perfect himself, so then it's not simply that he's going to lack perfection. But it means that the whole Bria, the whole reality, is he's destroying an entire reality. He's destroying the entire reality of existence. There's a reality of existence which he's causing to become worthless. Do you follow what I mean? That's a higher form of motivation. When a person embarks upon perfecting himself, it's not just a personal consideration. That's what the Mishnah is teaching us. You have to be on a level to appreciate this. I mean, that's why it's the last parak. It's a different level of motivation. A person could be motivated because he says he wants to enjoy perfection. It's very nice. But there's a higher level of motivation. What's the higher level of motivation? That here, the reality is that the universe was created for this purpose. Which means to say, if I partake of this purpose, then I'm partaking of something which reality was created for. There's a whole system of reality here. I can't just live in my own personal world. But I'm not just an individual with personal motivation, but I'm part of a system. And the question is, what is my role within the system? What am I within the system? If the system, in fact, was created for this purpose, so then if I forfeit my role, I'm forfeiting the entire creation. So the motivation that that an individual should really partake of is a motivation on two counts. It's on the personal, of course, but more than the personal, it should be motivation based on reality. Knowing the reality of his existence within the framework of all of reality, and knowing that reality should motivate him to perfection, not because of himself, but because he is an individual who is created by God in that framework. And God's work is important. You see. That should be the realistic motivation. It's a different kind of idea. Different kind of motivation. The last Mishnah, because it requires a level for a person to perceive such a type of motivation. Okay? Because the average person, a person that's on a low level, a boor, would never care about. He doesn't care about anything outside of himself. There is no recognition of a reality outside of the self. A person on a high level recognizes that there's a reality outside of his own personal existence. So therefore, if he acts in a certain way, it means it's a destruction, so to speak, of the entire framework of creation. It's not simply he should be motivated to live properly because of himself, but because how can you do this? What is the status of an individual? And not just himself. See, the first motivation that a person has, which is normal motivation, can be applied only to himself, not to anybody else. Let's say he's interested in perfecting himself. What's the difference? Somebody else has nothing to do with it. But the second level of motivation, the motivation basama moris nivra olam, is a motivation that can be applied equally to himself or to somebody else. The argument is the same. How can I allow somebody else to be destroyed, to destroy his nefesh, when that involves, in reality, the destruction of the whole creation? It involves the destruction of creation, which is God's work. So basically, objectively, it is a loss. It's an objective loss, not just a personal loss. That's what the Mishnah says. That's the idea. That's what the Mishnah says. Basara mamoros nivra olam. Uma talmud loma. Valo b'maymar echad yachol ibaros. So why did the Torah... Not the Mishnah means that it could have been with one. It can't be with one, because God's chokhmah is infinite, and God dictated asar mamoros has to be asar mamoros. It can't be less. Can't be more. But what it means is that why did the Torah, which is a book of a sefer of perfection, why should the Torah tell us about how God creates his universe? That's an asik for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not an asik for us. It's not our business. The answer is the Torah did it for one purpose, for one reason. The Torah wanted to give you this idea that God is saying in the Torah, I'm telling you, I want to inform you something about the creation. Why do I want to inform you about the creation? So you should know that your nefesh, whether it is successful or not, is not simply a matter of a personal gain or loss, but it's a gain or loss in terms of the framework of objective reality. That's why the pasuk grows up. That's the pshat. That's what the mission means. That's the pshat in the mission. That's what I'm telling you. The number 10 is insignificant. Happens to be it was 10. I mean, as far as we're concerned, it could have been 25. I mean, we don't know this chachma of creation. We're created beings, so we don't know the chachma of creation. But it doesn't matter how many it was. That's not the important thing. The important thing is that God disclosed to us that it was 10. It's the disclosure that's the important. It's not the number 10. God spent time in the Torah. In the Torah, God gives words of the Torah to express, uses words of the Torah, parshas of the Torah, to express the idea, to inform us about the creation. What's the purpose? The purpose is that we should realize that our activity is not just a personal gain or loss, but it involves the very creation. It involves the very creation. That's the reason. And that explains, basically, it explains why the Torah begins with voracious. It explains why the Torah begins with voracious. Because why should the Torah, actually, that's the kasha that Rashi mentions, Rabbi Yitzchak, was it Yitzchak?
Yeah.
Right, that's right. Yitzchak gets the kasha, he says that why didn't the Torah begin with Chodesh HaZalachem, the first mitzvah in the Torah? Mitzvahs! Why did the Torah begin with voracious? But according to this Mishnah, there's a very good reason why the Torah begins with voracious. Very good reason why. What's the purpose? Not to teach us anything about physics or about mice of voracious. That's not the purpose of the Torah. The purpose of the Torah is to teach us the importance of the framework in which human activity takes place. To understand what the importance is in reality. In terms of objective reality. That's the purpose. And that has to be the very first statement of the Torah. That's what the Torah starts with. That's the very first statement. Okay? That's what the Mishnah says. Now, what it mentions the Rishoyim is it's just showing you the contrast. In other words, the two possibilities. That's all. Now, let me just explain one thing.
I mean, find it more.
Yeah, like the idea of ecology. I mean, the Medrash says that B'shar Shabara Kadosh Baruch Hasanam Rishon. So Nutlo, he took him and he took him through Gan Eden and he said to him, Olam Yafa Barasi, Tain Daitcha Shlo Sachar V'Salami. I create a beautiful world, make sure that you don't destroy my world. That's what God instructed Adam Rishon. So what's the pshat? The pshat is, I mean, that's basically an ecological statement, which means that man has the ability to destroy nature. And as you see, I mean, today you see that man is capable of doing it. He has destroyed parts of nature already that can never be replaced. But I want you to understand something. We are not, that's not the essence. We're not essentially ecological. We're only accidentally ecological. But what's the purpose of it? You see, those people who believe in ecology per se, it like a religion, that means that they believe there's a benefit in the physical per se. We maintain there's a benefit in the physical, but the benefit from the physical is only to bring a person into the world of ideas, into the world of chokhmah. The truth of the matter is that those people who are fighting for the ecology are involved in a waste of time. Because since they don't believe there's any purpose in men appreciating Chachma, so it comes out their purpose is just a beautiful world. But the beautiful world, the purpose of the beautiful world is only as a means for man to involve himself in Chachma Hashem. So therefore they're involved in a useless endeavor. But Yadis does hold from Yadis. Does insist that man protect the environment, but not for the environment per se. It's for man to be able to perceive Chachmas Hashem, and if you're going to destroy the environment, you're not going to be able to do it, because this world is made in a very intricate way, and once you disturb the balance, you're going to cause yourself harm, not for this generation, it'll be for 10 generations. But a person has to be able to look at things in terms of total reality, not just personal, and menial and earthly. It has to be able to look like Avram, down for generations and generations. Means an object has to have an objective view of reality, not just an emotional view, like Rashi says, can only go for a couple of generations. Grandson, great grandson, after that, that's it. He doesn't care what's going to happen. But in terms of objective reality, Avram was concerned for Doris and Doris. So we have to really, we have to be concerned in terms of ecology. But not ecology, but we, see, we share, it's like the rough one time mentioned. Ger v'sosha v'nocha v'nimocham. Avraham Avinu said to the people, to the B'nai Ches, he said, I'm a ger and I'm a toshav. What's a pshat ger and toshav? It means in one sense I'm like you, in one sense I'm not like you. So that means, like, if the people will get together and say, should we join them in an ecological undertaking, we would certainly say yes. But our purpose would not be the same as theirs. I mean, it'd be two different purposes. In the sense that we would try to protect the environment from being destroyed and causing harm to mankind because of its destruction, that we agree with them, but not the same purpose. But the Basar Mamaros is referring to the ultimate objective of man, which is the objective of perception of Chachma. True. See, the fact that God created the earth shows you great import to the earth. It has great importance. There's no question about it. But that doesn't mean that we should therefore make the earth into a museum and not live in any part of the earth because we're destroying it. That's a deification of the object of the earth. That's against the idols. What we're saying is that it's the fact that God created the earth shows the earth is of great importance, and therefore the purpose for which it was created should be fulfilled. Which is for man to live a life of Chachma. Now we go into another question. The question is, since apparently Chazal held, I wouldn't go into this area, it's really metaphysical. It's metaphysical, and you'd think that metaphysics doesn't have to do with ethics, so, you know, we shouldn't go into the area altogether. But over here, there is an ethical bridge. The bridge was already established, namely, that insofar as a person perceives accurately the idea of the creation and how the creation stands in relationship to himself, insofar as he has an accurate perception of that, that will affect his ethical motivation, because that's what the Mishnah is saying, basically. So that demands, actually, that we should have an understanding of what it means that the world was created for man. What exactly does that mean? Is that to be taken literally, that the whole universe was created for man? Or is perhaps that's not true? I mean, that's something which is... otherwise, I'd say it's a philosophical, so we shouldn't go into it. It's a metaphysical question. Metaphysics is a different area. But you see the Mishnah ties the metaphysics with the ethics over here. Because it says that the Mishnah says that a person's motivation has to be in terms of the framework of objective reality. That demands that we know what the objective reality is. So therefore, we're forced really to go into the question of what exactly is meant by the statement that the universe was created for man. Is it really literally true, or is it not true? It's an important question. Okay? The Mara discussed this in chapter 13 of the third book, and also in chapter 25. The Rambam mentions the point that you can't say that the universe he says like this. He says, you're going to go on and on. I say, what's the purpose of the universe for me? And then you continue to ask the question. So what's the purpose of my existence in order to be perfected? And what's the purpose of me being perfected? So you can't say for God. That's against the Kol Teravullah. So what the Rambam is saying is like this. The Rambam is saying is that people are satisfied to stop at one point. You'll notice people don't ask, what's the purpose of the universe? For you to be perfected. People are very happy after that. That's the end of their philosophy. Philosophy ceases at that point. There's a reason for it. It's a psychological reason. The reason is because it's a very comfortable kind of idea. Because a person likes to think that he's extremely important. It's in line with his assessment of reality. And therefore, when the answer is that everything was created for me, there's no need to go any further. That's the end of it. You see? There's no need to go any further. Now we've
rock bottom.
This is it. Don't go any further. The point is, you see, the Rambam, that's why the Rambam maintains that it really, he says that it's not good for a person to, see, now I'll explain something to you. That in motivating people towards Torah, I mean, you have to use every motivation that you can. And I'm not saying you should tell this to a person who is getting involved in Torah. He's happy with the idea that the whole universe is created in order for him, even if he thinks all the other people are created in order that he should be able to... also let him think that way. But the Rambam says there is a great benefit for man in having true ideas. There's a great benefit for man in having true ideas. And a person does not ultimately benefit by distorting his view of reality. It leads to a corruption, which if he doesn't really improve himself, up to a certain point, there's a low lishma aspect which motivates him. But after that point, on the contrary, it's a corruption. A person can only really be happy when he's in line with reality. And on the contrary, if a person realizes that he is not as great as he thinks he is, and that the universe was not all created for him, if he comes to grips with that reality, he is a more perfected individual. Okay. That's really the Basar Mamaris Nivra Olam. What is this Mishnah telling you? It's telling you that a knowledge of the creation is important in terms of perfection. So if your knowledge is distorted over there, then it's going to affect your perfection. It's not simply a different subject matter or metaphysics. You see?
What's the Rambam?
Rambam says, this is page 274 in the paperback edition. I consider, therefore, the following opinion is most correct according to the teaching of the Bible and best in accordance with the results of philosophy, namely that the universe does not exist for man's sake, but that each being exists for its own sake, and not because of some other thing. Thus we believe in the creation, and yet need not inquire what purpose is served by each species of the existing things, because we assume that God created all parts of the universe by His will, some for their own sake, and some for the sake of other beings, that include their own purpose in themselves. Okay? See, sometimes the Rambam says that something's created as a means for man. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it has its own meaning. See, ultimately, even if you should disagree with the Rambam, and you should say that there's a reason for some of the distant galaxies which we've never seen, and areas of the universe that have no relationship to us, even if you should say such a thing, but you should realize that from a philosophical standpoint, you haven't answered anything. Only from an emotional standpoint, not from a philosophical one. Okay. So ultimately, you're going to have to say one thing. The reason for the creation is God's will, and you cannot ask, What is the purpose? Just like you can't ask what's the purpose of God's existence, you cannot ask what's the purpose of the creation. It's an absurd idea. Question is absurd. That's what Ram said at the beginning of the night. That's what he uses. That's the language he uses. He said, I'd like to point out the absurdity of the question. Okay? He says, to those who receive the good flowing down upon them, it may appear as if the being existed for them alone that sends forth its goodness and kindness unto them. Thus some citizen may imagine that it was for the purpose of protecting his house by night from thieves that the king was chosen. To some extent this is correct, for when his house is protected and he has derived this benefit through the king whom the country had chosen, it appears as if it were the object of the king to protect the house of that man, he says. In this manner we must explain every verse, the literal meaning of which would imply that something superior was created for the sake of something inferior. Namely, that it is part of the nature of the superior thing to influence the inferior in a certain manner. You see? We remain firm in our belief that the whole universe was created in accordance with the will of God, and we do not inquire for any other cause or object. Just as we do not ask, what is the purpose of God's existence, so we do not ask, what was the object of His will, which is the cause of the existence of all things, with their present properties, both those that have been created and those that will be created. Okay? So what does Rambam say? So the Rambam says, it's just like, it's for man in the sense that the way the universe was created, in the creation of the universe, he gives an example, like the king. Person thinks that an egocentric person will think that the purpose of the whole government is that his house should be protected from thieves at night. So, of course, he's wrong. But he's not totally wrong. He's not totally wrong because there is an aspect of the governmental system in which his house, there is room for his house being protected there. Okay, and this is an important thing. So the Rambam says that it is true that the universe. He says, for instance, like the certain pesukim in the Torah seem to me. It says, "V'hoyulim oros b'kiyashamayim." The limshol bayom ubalaylo lahavdil beino arenachosha. So the pasuk seems to say that's the purpose of the heavenly bodies is limshol bayom ubalaylo, so we could have day and night, right? So the Rambam says it should be understood in the same way as the concept that a person might have, the idea that this person might have, that the whole government is created for what reason? Is created for protection of his house. It's true in a sense, which means that the universe was created in a way that man should benefit insofar as he needs from the universe. That was built into the plan of the universe, you see. Because, you'll ask me a question, if this is also what the Rambam says, so then how could the Mishnah say, Basama Mars never olam, and that the purpose of God's work is for man's perfection? But it's not true! You see, the Rambam maintains the universe was not created for man. Was not created for man entirely, solely. That the extents of the universe are created for their own existence, the Rambam says. Most, as a matter of fact. The Rambam conclusion is most. Just one, there's certain parts of created for man. But! So what is the meaning of the Asar Mamoros? The answer is like this. The true answer to the Asar Mamoros is that when God in his infinite wisdom created the universe, man was taken into consideration in the creation so that his needs be satisfied in order that he be able to perfect himself. But that was not the essential object of the creation. The object of the creation is the question, what is the purpose of the creation, is like asking what is the purpose of God. The question is absurd, and any answer would be absurd. Matter of fact, I remember the Rav one time told a story that his grandfather was in the house. They went to visit a gadol. I don't remember if you mentioned who it was. And two gadolim were with Reb Chaim, and they were waiting for this gadol in the anteroom. And what happened was that they started to discuss. They were looking around the Sfarim in the room, and they started to discuss about God's creation, why God created it. So why did God create the world? So one said that he created it for his glory, because there's a lechlodo, and another one said because of his anitis. I don't remember exactly. So Reb Chaim was there. Reb Chaim overheard the conversation. He says, no, you're wrong. He says, he didn't create it. He didn't create it for any reason. You can't give any reason why I created it. And he just walked away. When it says Shakol Bara Lechvodo, the Rambam says means his glory is the same thing as saying himself. That's what it means. Shakol Bara Lechvodo means not that he created it for, I mean, his honor is absurd. I mean, say God needs honor from people. So Lechvodo, his glory is another way, because it says the glory of God descended. Kvod Hashem. Vine Kvod Hashem. Kvod Hashem means Hashem. Shakol Bar Lechvodo means, it means, Kol Paul Hashem Lama'anehu, the Rambam says. What does Lama'anehu mean? Lama'anehu means himself. Because you can't possibly ask why God created something. It's an absurd question. But what does it mean when it says, Basar Mamaras Never Olam? It means that God took into consideration with his infinite wisdom in causing the universe to unravel, that there should be a place for man in it, and that he should benefit from the creation, but not that that is the objective of all of creation. That's an absurd idea. The Rambam says it's an egomaniacal idea, and it is not a good idea for man to believe, because if man believes that, then he's haughty. It's not true. It's not real. It's not true, and it's something which is in line with his most base emotion, and therefore he would do best to get rid of that idea. That's the Rambam. Matan Torah is certainly for man. There's no question about that. But you can't say that every idea in the Torah is for man. The ideas and some ideas in the Torah are in order to perfect man, but the ideas in the Torah reflect God's infinite chachma. And there are ideas in the Torah that are simply a reflection of God's infinite chachma. The Matan Torah was for man, but the Chachmas Hashem is Chachmas Hashem. That's a part of his essence. And the idea is not to overestimate, not to underestimate. Because I'll tell you why. What's the point of it is, if you overestimate, so it shows that you're driven by that idea. You're driven by that idea, trying to satisfy that idea. That's why you can't tolerate the concept that God created the rest of the universe for its own purpose. You, a person, an infantile individual, can't tolerate the idea that God is so to speak, in his framework, preoccupied with anything besides him. That's it. There's nothing else has importance or existence besides him. He's the only existence. Now, if that is the motivation, then there's an illness in the soul. But that's why the Rambam says we have to be able to accept what true reality is. We aren't the only existence of God. As painful as it might be emotionally, we have to be able to accept that. But insofar as what God did for us, like Matan Torah, or that in the scheme of creation, He made it possible for the universe to unravel in a way that we can reach a level of perceived Chachmas Hashem, that certainly has to be recognized as part of His works. And therefore, Basama Morris never Olam. You see? That's what the Rambam is saying. Many people felt that the first part of the Rambam, where the Rambam deals with the Hamonim, so they felt that this is not an issue anymore. That the reason why the Rambam wrote the first part of the Mora, he writes all about the Hamonim in the Bible. So he goes through all these different words that seem to be on the surface literal, and they can't be literal, like God went down, or the concept of Gmuas Tzelem, all these terms in the Torah that refer and make reference to God. And the Rambam elaborates and explains that none of these terms really are literal. And most scholars feel that it was an issue in the time of the Rambam, because in the time of the Rambam, some people took it literally. They thought that God Hashem means that God actually has a hand. But then later, the Rambam was the one that was, the Rambam was very successful, and people dropped that idea. And now it has no validity anymore. It's a dead issue. The truth of the matter is that it's not so. The reason why the Rambam began his sefer with Hamanim contains a very deep idea. And we'll explore it a little more as we go a little further. But it's very applicable, and it is the most appropriate way to begin his sefer, as the Maran of Ochan. It's a necessary way to begin your sefer. Not just that it was an issue at that time, and that's why the Rambam took it up. Of course, it was an issue at that time, and it's true, the Rambam was successful in defeating the view that God has any physical form, which was prevalent at the time. But that's not why he began the sefer that way. The sefer begins the way it has to begin that way. But in relationship to the homonyms, any term that we use is always deficient. So according to the Rambam, we could best describe it by saying the purpose of the creation of the universe is because of God's will. And to us, the word God's will is not a good choice of words, because it implies something that I don't think the Rambam means, but that it, in our language has a certain connotation, a will, like a human will, which is also, again, a false notion. I mean, God doesn't have a will like a person has a will. What the Rambam means by God's will, when he mentions it in the Mora, he always says his will, his wisdom, which is his essence. Okay? Which is his essence. I guess the term essence would most closely approximate what the Rambam means. Or I would use another word which again is not appropriate but might convey a better idea. If we would say in line with God's nature, you see. But again, the word nature is, all these terms are painted. We say God's nature. God doesn't have a nature as we understand the nature of a matter or inanimate or animate matter. And God doesn't have a nature, so to speak. But the idea of the nature of something is a true idea in relationship to God's creation, but not in relationship to God, who's above His creation. So we could say, I guess the best term, I'm talking around it because, I mean, I want to convey an idea, but I don't want to convey a false notion. So it means to say, what the Rambam is saying is that the act of the creation is a result directly of God's essence. Of God's essence. And you can't ask any questions. Because that's why the Rambam says it's an absurd thing to ask, why did God create anything? That's why people say that God created the universe for His glory. But the Rambam explains it's not for His glory, because that would mean that God has a need, that He needs the glory of the covet of people, which is the greatest certainty. But His glory, Shekol Bar L'Chvodo, the Rambam explains, means, L'Chvodo means Him. It's another term for God. Kovar Hashem, L'Chvodo. So we say that Bruch Kvod Hashem Bimkomo. What does it mean, Kvod Hashem Bimkomo? God's honor. Kvod Hashem is a term that we use in reference to God because we don't perceive His essence. So we say, Hine Kvod Hashem Mole as honor. It means God, but we don't use the word God because that would imply that God actually, so to speak, physically spread Himself out in the unknown, which is Avodah Zarah. So say Kvod Hashem. Kvod Hashem is a term that denotes something about God, but not His essence the way people would think about it. So therefore, it comes out that the Rambam explains that the universe was not created for man. Nevertheless, when the Mishnah says, so what is the Mishnah saying? That the Torah tells us, Basarim Amoros Nivra Olam. So the purpose of the Asarim Amoros is to teach us that Basarim Amoros, in other words, why did the Torah say Basarim Amoros? The Torah said B'mai Marechot. Not that it could have been B'mai Marechot. It couldn't have been B'mai Marechot. But the Torah says Basarim Amoros because the Torah wants to teach us a sefer. The Sefer Bereishis wants to teach us about the importance of human existence. And how important is human existence in the realm of the universe? And the answer is, human existence is important, because you see that the Torah went out of its way to tell us that the universe was created by Basarim Amoros. What's the purpose of telling us Basarim Amoros? The purpose is to show us the importance of the proper way of life, that the person lives according to the proper way of life is in line with the creation of the universe. He's in line with the creation of the universe. That man is not a totally insignificant existence, but not that the whole universe was created for man. Right? As man partakes of creation, man partakes of this creation, which is an act of God, and insofar as he partakes of the creation, his life is either is in line with the creation, supports the God's actions, God's will, which is of course which is God's essence, or it doesn't support he doesn't support God's essence, he doesn't support God's will, he's not in line with the creation, so he's not in line with the reality of God's actions. Okay? Which means to say that it's not just that man's behavior, the way man acts, is not simply a personal thing. Either he acts according to his benefit. It's more than just for his benefit. In other words, you could have a system of philosophy where you would say that a person should live the correct life simply because then he has a better life. Yeah, but it's more than that. That's an ethical concept. It's more than an ethical concept, it's a metaphysical concept. Alright, that's the difference between an ethical philosophy or the philosophy of Yadis. Because Yadis is an ethical philosophy, there's no question about it. That a person who lives in line with the Torah, so then he has the most effective ethical life. That's true. But it's more than that. The Torah wants us to be aware that a person, by living an ethical life, is in line with a certain metaphysical reality, in line with a certain reality of existence. And that existence is what the Torah begins with in Bereishis, to describe the nature of the way God's act of creation took place. So a person who lives in that manner is in line with that reality. Actually, the whole concept of Tselem Elokim really is to differentiate between man and between the lower animals. The essential difference lies in one concept. The concept that man can perceive another reality. In other words, the reasoning faculty of the mind, when a person, for instance, a person is involved mainly in natural reason, involved in instinctual, since the hate of admiration. But when a person, for instance, starts reasoning about reality, reasoning uncovers a totally different world. And the essence of man is that he's capable of being concerned about this other world of reality. And a person who has no concern for that reality has no part has no part in the other. Has no, because the idea of a Kadosh Baruch Hu can't mean anything to him. You can't have any meaning for him. What is the idea of God? The idea that Yadus presents as God. The idea that Yadus presents as God is like the Rambam says in the very beginning of the Hilchos Yisrael Torah. Very beginning of the Hilchos Yisrael Torah. Just get me wrong with that. Yisrael Yisrael is Vamar HaChachmas Leida Sheyesh Shom Motzi Rishon Vu Mamzi Kol Nimtza. To know that there is one eternal source, one primary, of course, again, is Rishon doesn't mean Rishon in the sense of first, it means Rishon in the sense of eternal. Vu Mamzi Kol Nimtza. V'chol HaNimtzoim Yishamayim V'oretz Masha B'nehem Lo Nimtzu Elo Me'amita Simmatzo. It's the very first Rambam. It's the Yisodei 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 Yisodei. So what does it mean to say? It means to say that the only person that can have any part in Elokei Yisrael is only a person who has an interest, in reality. The person has no interest in the concept of reality, in ultimate reality. He can't have any place in the midst of Yedias Hashem, the very first mitzvah.